Hello and welcome to Bad End Podcast. This is episode number 67. I am Josh Calixto. You have found me on Kotaku.com, Rolling Stone's Glixel, most recently at Billboard and a couple other music publications like MTV and stuff like that. I am joined, as always, by my co-hosts Katie McCarthy.
Hello. Hello.
And Kyle Cookstell.
Hello.
Katie is at usgamer.net. Kyle is at a bunch of places. He's currently had a little life change going on, right, Kyle?
Mm-hmm.
He's got more time to record.
Yeah. I think, have we talked about this? I left my full-time job. I can't remember if we talked about that on a podcast already.
Yeah. I don't know if we talked about it on or off the air. Quote,
yeah,
the air.
I'm a full-time game developer now.
Wow.
Yeah.
And any game development stuff you want to plug?
Wink, right wink. Now? You want to get into it? Let's do it. Let's get into it. So I left my job like mid-November and then wanted to kind of work on a small thing between what I left my job to do, which is a strategy game that Bad End listeners may know about called Cantata. It's Cantata game on Twitter. Check it out. But I wanted to make a small thing kind of like before, just like going heads down for like maybe a year, year and a half on working on this other game. So I was still working on Cantata, but kind of like in my spare time was working on this game with my friend Kevin and this artist Emily called The Beach. I think I teased it on this podcast.
Yeah, I think you talked
before.
About it.
Yeah. So the Beach is officially out. I got the awesome URL, which is thebeachgame.com, which I now own for the low price of $8 a year. And you can play it on itch. The general premise is that it is a endless battle royale game where you play as a seagull on a beach trying to just survive. So you're running around, digging up gold, trying to like avoid other players. And it's fun. It's fucking weird. did you guys play? I don't know if you guys actually played it.
I played it, but I don't think anyone else is online at the time.
Yeah, it sucks if it's just you.
It was just me. A little seagull avoiding the wave.
And you're like, exit game.
Have a lonely, sad experience. Just me as a seagull alone on the beach.
We should have a little crew time. A little
We should like set up like a Bad End Discord.
Oh, shit.
The beach party. Like a literal
beach. Oh, man.
Beach,
we should definitely do a beach party.
Yeah.
We did a couple little Bad End streams this week of some newer games, actually. And it was pretty cool. I mean, it was all within Discord, so like only people within Discord were able to really watch and interact. But it's fun. I mean, and if you want to be a part of that, you can subscribe to the Bad End of Patreon, which is patreon.com/badend. If you become a subscriber, you get Discord access, and it's cool. We got a bunch of cool people in there. Thanks to all the new people who joined as a result of our crazy blitz of December content. Sorry that we're back on our regular schedule, but if we get more supporters, we do that stuff more often. You know what I'm saying? Go every week, that type of thing. It's a lucrative offer for all of us. You know,
we might get $25 per episode. So if you do the math, that's like $600 a year, which is definitely enough to pay half of someone's rent.
Yeah, it's for enough a month. To get like a new microphone that
one,
is of the highest quality.
Buy one video game console.
Yeah.
We'll play the beach.
What else do you want to say about the beach?
Yeah. I mean, it's cool. Like, I don't know. It's not like super obvious from just looking at it, but we did it because me and my friend Kevin specifically wanted to try to like work with like kind of like larger scale multiplayer libraries. So stuff that's not just about like playing two players locally. It's about like, how do we build a game that can work with like 80 people, right? Like this battle royale style thing. So we did that. And then another thing we're kind of playing with is it's not really running right now, but I've been trying to do it on and off when I'm not using my computer, which is this idea of sort of a kind of like perpetually running game stream. So the idea of the game is that I have to just basically pay for the service, but essentially host the game somewhere, like on like a remote computer, and just have Twitch always streaming it. So the idea is that you're kind of like going to Twitch and you're just like, what's going on the beach? Is kind of the idea we want people to have. And so ideally, again, like we're kind of like moving through that and updating it and adding new stuff. But this idea is that it's a sort of ambient experience that people can really quickly kind of like gather around and play for like 5 or 10 minutes and then like quit if they want to. So yeah, it's, I mean, it's a kind of a cool, weird experiment. It was cool to just work on something and get something out. Check it out. It's like totally free on itch, thebeachgame.com. Check it out. And I mean, join the Discord or hit us up. There's also, we're at The Beach Game on Twitter. If you have any comments about anything, let us know. So yeah, thanks for thanks for giving me the airtime.
Congrats, Kyle. Congrats on the launch.
Thanks, man. I made it, launched a video game. It's hard. Yeah. It's hard to fucking launch a video game. Yeah.
Even for also, the small. Art for the beach is really cute, I should mention.
Yeah, shout out Emily Grimaldi. Yeah. She did all the art. I think she's Emily Grimaldi on Twitter. I mean, on Instagram. She's super good. Said she totally crushed it. We kind of wanted this like vintage postcard aesthetic, and I think we got there pretty well. So
Yeah.
Good stuff, good stuff. Have you been playing anything else this week?
Man, I'm going to just talk right now so I can get it all out of my system, because all I've been playing is Magic. Well, I guess, and I played some Legends of Runeterra, which you were playing too, so we can talk about that a little bit. But
I actually played some Magic this week as well.
Yeah. Card games, man. Who would have thought?
My favorite subject.
Not me, not you, not the guy who writes about Hearthstone.
I mean, for you, I'm saying.
Yeah. No, I don't know. Like, one thing that's like kind of crazy about Magic the Gathering Arena specifically is that the game is just like really fucking well made. Like, I think it's well made in a way that like even like Runeterra is not necessarily. Like, it's like everything has like a purpose and everything feels like just right. Like, it feels like you're shuffling cards. Like, when like things happen and like these animations happen on the field, it feels good. Like, it's kind of crazy, like all the small things that they do to make these sort of cards come to life in a way that I don't really think any game before it did, maybe. Like the sort of like having card art that you spawn, which then spawns sometimes like a 3D character that's like, almost like Yu-Gi-Oh style, like just happens.
That stuff doesn't stick out to me as much because I do feel like Hearthstone and Runeterra do that.
Did Hearthstone do that? Like have 3D characters come out of cards?
Not 3D characters. I know what you're talking about with the 3D characters. I guess that's a little bit different, but
I mean, I know there's like similar stuff, but specifically, like, I think what Magic does really well that it can kind of pull on in a way that like Runeterra can't necessarily pull on is sort of like a legacy of the idea of playing Magic as a thing. Like, what Magic the Gathering Arena is sort of capitalizing on is this like pent up 20-year history of the sort of the idea of like what it means to sit down to play Magic with someone, like at a sort of like diegetic level, is that you're like, you're each this person who's like controlling creatures and like casting them against each other. That sort of like, I don't know what the fucking word
it's
is.
Like,
I can't think of
it's like a card game that has come to life. Whereas I feel like Runeterra is much more, Runeterra and Hearthstone for that matter, are both card games that are trying not to be card games. It's just like a digital game that involves cards that are like modeled after, where the mechanics are kind of modeled after card games. But aesthetically, it's trying to... those games are trying to look more like not cards. You know what I'm saying? It's trying to look more like a digital thing. Whereas this is like, you clearly got cards. You clearly got, you know, some digital space, but like you have a digital, you have a board that like looks like a physical board that you would play on. And you're like, the thing about like a lot of Magic, the Gathering, is that when you're playing it in real life, a lot of it is kind of difficult to keep track of. As a physical game, the board states get really complex. You'll have like 15 tokens on the board, all these counters on that you're trying to keep track of each of those tokens with. And those board states, it's like, how are you supposed to do this in a physical space? And while that is possible, and while people do it all the time, it's not weird for Magic the Gathering. It does feel like putting that into a digital space it's almost like an optimization and an elevation or an upgrade to that experience where it's like, oh, it actually can work better in a digital space.
Yeah. I mean, I think like what I'm getting at too, though, is more that like there was this sort of like proposition of magic as like a thematic thing is like had basically a 20-year lead time to build that leads to Magic the Gathering Arena, where it's like this, what I'm seeing now as I play Magic is what I think in my mind as I'm playing Magic. And I feel so like
it feels like a physical card coming to life.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It feels like it's like I've always imagined playing Magic felt like this, and now I'm actually seeing it. And I think like something similar that hopefully Katie you could speak on this a little bit too is like I think there's a similar parallel between like Breath of the Wild and Zelda, where like for so long, like Zelda 1, Ocarina of Time or whatever, have this sort of proposition of like Zelda as a sort of like big exploration game. And like, it's true to an extent, but it's not until you like play Breath of the Wild that you're like, fuck, Hyrule Field is fucking huge. Gerudo Valley is a fucking valley. Like Zora's Domain is a fucking domain. Like it's all this like shit that's kind of like been kind of hinted at in like small ways across games, and Breath of the Wild is like kind of pulling on that again almost like 20-year leverage of saying like, oh, this is what this looks like at the level you've always imagined it looking like.
Yeah, I see that. I respect that. Never really played Magic in person, so you know, it is funny though. I actually did. I was a couple weeks ago with some friends playing Magic. I got some cards from someone in the Discord. We did a little Discord Secret Santa, and I was playing some physical Magic the Gathering.
Oh shit!
In Meat Space, and it was like really cool because like I had never had that experience, and it was almost the opposite effect, Kyle, where I felt like, oh, playing in person has just so many more benefits, and it just feels so much more organic than playing in digital space, because a lot of the stuff that you can just do in person, you have to like wait for the computer to process, you have to wait for the opponent, oh shit, I forgot to click end or like skip turn,
yeah,
or whatever. But in person you can kind of just be like, okay, I do this, I do that, I do this, I do that. And then the opponent just registers that. They take their piece off the board. They do this, this, and that. You kind of just remember stuff and keep track of it that way. So it feels more human.
Right, right, right.
In a way that I had never felt, aside from when I would play like Yu-Gi-Oh and stuff as a kid. But I thought that was like really cool about playing Magic the Gathering in person. Because it does have those types of interactions.
I feel like a surprising amount of people I know, like normal people, play Magic, and I don't think I realized it until like relatively recently. Like just like a lot of people I know are just really into Magic, or just like it's like a board game they have laying around basically, and I had no idea it was like, maybe that's just like my ignorance of card games in general, but I was like, damn, I had no idea this many people were into Magic, but so many people I know are just into it casually.
I think it's also crazy, like, kind of, Josh, what you're talking about as well. And then Katie, too, like, I'm trying to think of anything that has, like, a similar, I mean, besides, like, games, like, what is a thing that can be both, like, physical and digital and not, like, split its audience? Like, Magic is interesting in part because it has a very robust online community for the game, but also has, like, people who still play the physical version. I'm trying to think of like what other media has a similar thing that's not just like games that can like span to sort of like physical, digital.
I mean, I was going to say like Star Wars does like a bunch of those novels that are like in addition to,
but it's
the
different though, right?
Yeah, I guess like so. I was like the closest thing I could think of is because like people,
I think
read
music
those
has
books.
That.
Yeah,
where,
music
like,
definitely.
You have people who will play analog instruments who will then, you know, use GarageBand if they're kind of starting out, or like they learn how to use Ableton and loops and produce their own stuff with their own digital audio workstations and stuff like that.
Thingies.
Oh no, yeah. I think even more so, Josh, is like, it's the difference between, I mean, just like second your point, it's the difference between listening to music like through Spotify and then like seeing the live version. I think that's like a pretty
all that stuff.
Comparable parallel where it's like, it's the literally the same thing, but the context is different. And some people only go to shows and some people listen. I mean, I don't think people who go to shows don't necessarily listen to music online, but I think a lot of people listen to bands and never see them live. So.
Right.
Good point.
Magic the Gathering Arena is cool. I sat through one of my friend's drafts yesterday and we just kind of like talked through it and we're talking about like what to do and what we should draft. The thing that kind of does suck, what I wish would happen from Magic the Gathering, what something I'd love to see, and maybe this already exists in some form or another, is if they had some sort of tie-in with the physical cards and the online game where like if you had, you know, you could get like digital copies of some of your cards or something like that in the game if you buy them in real life.
They have something like that. I don't remember what exactly it is, but it's something where it's like if you buy, it's like certain decks or things you can buy come with like codes that you can enter into Magic and they'll give you, I think like if you buy like certain Planeswalkers decks, you like get like a deck code and you get the Planeswalker. And then I think some like packs of packs have redemption things that you can redeem for some number of like packs online.
Oh, okay. That's cool. Yeah. I figured, but I hadn't seen much of that, but that's like a cool way to kind of tie together both of those.
I mean, I'm not going to lie, worlds. Dude. Like I was literally in the city a few days ago and I was like, I kind of want to buy a physical deck just to like have it and like feel it. Cause like I play it so much now. I like want to see these things now physically. It's just kind of weird and I was not expecting that.
Stream a draft. Do you ever do the draft modes?
Yeah, I gotta pay for that though, so we'll see.
But you get the in-game currency for it.
Not for drafts, you have to pay for gems.
Gems.
It's that premium shit.
Yeah,
premiumbeats.com.
Done a lot. I mean, just fucking pay for a draft.
Just fuck
Kyle.
It. I have no job right
Kyle,
now.
Stop
man.
Being
the,
a cheapskate.
Listen, the beach.
They're not that expensive.
The beach has made me $25, so if I can get the beach to be a little more lucrative, I can join some drafts.
Hey, I retweeted it, man, twice.
You did. I don't know what the knockdown effects were on my analytics, but I'll check them out to see how many refs.
I hope it helped, you know? And I hopped on immediately.
Actually,
sorry, what?
I didn't even tweet a disclosure. I just retweeted
just
like it was
bam,
something I liked.
This looks dope.
This looks cute. Look earlier. At the you liked Goose Game, right? People that follow me. This is another bird with a silly face.
It's another. I mean, that's
another bird game. The other rude birds.
Runeterra was another game that we played with some people on the Discord.
That's the League of Legends card game.
Yeah.
No. Yeah.
Legends
okay.
of Runeterra.
I was making sure I was right with that.
It's in beta, open beta. You can snag that shit on Play Runeterra. Man, I really like it. I think its art is spectacular. I mean, I think League of Legends' art
yeah,
is
Yeah, I was
great.
Gonna say, like, I feel like League's art's always been really good. It's like the one thing that's made
Not
me more
always,
interested in
but...
that. I don't know. I feel like I see, like, a lot of art
Yeah,
for
no, it
League
start,
stuff
I'm
where
saying,
I'm like, this looks really good.
It started off as, like, infamously bad.
Like, oh, yeah.
It's just, like, generic outsourced fantasy trash.
It's not even, it's so bad, it's worse than generic. Like, some of the art is, like, it looks like a fucking seventh grader drew it on some of the, if you look up, like, the OG Soraka art, the original Poppy
Soraka?
Art, Soraka, if you look up, like, the old Soraka art, or the original Poppy art, oh my god, Poppy. Me and my friends, when we used to play, whenever her art would pop up, we'd just be like, we would just be cracking up because she looks like a freaking tweaker, straight up. She looks like, she looks like,
wow, this Soraka
she's got
art.
These like real high ass looking eyes. They even like made a nod to it in the new like art that they
Dude,
have out for
this
me.
Shit looks like fucking airbrush shit that people get on the sides of like their Acuras.
Oh hell yeah, I'm into this now.
Yeah,
it's like straight up like Need for
That's
Speed
someone...
like paint mode.
Someone Dude, needs to make like an airbrush so styled game that would look so sick, like if someone just really committed to it, like on purpose, like just trashy looking.
Oh yeah,
air, like right. I've been style. Wanting one so bad. Like I almost got on my county fair, my hometown's county fair this year but they're really expensive. Like airbrushed.
Wait,
shirts,
trash.
Like,
you wanna, what is this game?
They do
look
it
like?
Like
trashy yeah. airbrush shirt or game.
Oh, I know. I want.
Saying
like,
she wants something.
I wanted a shirt.
Oh, you want a trashy airbrush.
But I also, but I want a game that's like in the that same style. Like, you know, like just like, it's really.
So like League of Legends, is that?
Yeah, like early League of Legends.
Old school League. It looks worse than airbrush art. Honestly.
Damn, that's like harsh.
Anyway, it's come a long way since then. And the art is really fucking awesome. I love it. They've got this beautiful, like when you open, when you look at your collection, you can like. The card gives you like a little eye that you can click on to view the art. It goes on your whole screen, the art, and it's like you're just looking at the art of the, on the card, and it's got this cool flavor text, and it has those it has really cool animations in this game, like when you play cards, card effects, the way that it works is I'll step back here a second. But what's cool about this game is that you can like just earn all your cards. Like, I don't feel like you have to spend much money at all, and you'll just keep earning cards, which is really cool. It's something that you don't get in like a Hearthstone, for instance. So like every week you, as you gain experience, which you just get off of doing your daily quests and, just winning games or playing games, you get experience. And every time you get more experience, like you're leveling up your like quote weekly chests, which on Tuesday they unlock and you open your chests and you'll get like 30 cards or something like that, 20 cards or some shit. And my weekly chest just opened and like one fifth of my thing was like three rares, two epics, and a champion card, which is like, if you were to get that in a pack in Hearthstone, like you get one pack or one epic, maybe once every like 10 packs in Hearthstone, and a legendary, maybe once every 20 packs in Hearthstone. So the fact that you just get like two rare epics and a champion card every week, theoretically, is like nuts in this game. So it also uses a wild card system, which is similar to Magic the Gathering, where you can just
like. Yeah, that shit's so good.
It gives you, there's a common, rare, epic, and legendary.
No, there's one other dumb one on top of it that's like such a league name. It's like super. It's like, what the fuck?
No. That's it. The legendary is champion.
Champion. That's what it's like, champion.
But the reason why it's called champion cards is because they're champions. Yeah. The only legendary cards in the game are champions. They're not like minions or spells can't be legendary or the top epic or rarity or whatever. And it's interesting because champions in Runeterra are like the same sort of concept as like Planeswalker. It's basically like a really powerful like creature type thing that you play. And once you've completed certain criteria, it levels up and it can become like a really powerful late game card that will like win you the game type of thing. So it's like a Planeswalker in that respect, which I dig about it. But it's like as if in Magic, the only mythic rare cards were Planeswalkers. So it's kind of neat. So you have your deck that's like a bunch of creatures and spells, and then the max amount of champions you can have in your deck is six. Champion cards you can have in your deck is six. So yeah, it's cool. But I feel like I'm earning cards. I really like the system a lot. It's got this nice like in between Hearthstone and Magic the Gathering sort of difficulty curve that I don't think is like significantly less complex than Magic. I don't think that it can do as much right now. I don't think the system allows for as much right now just because it's in such an early stage. And so much of the stuff in Magic, when you think about it, is like keywords and stuff that was introduced over time to the game, because you know it's been out for decades now.
Yeah,
it's had so much time to like introduce new mechanics that it's naturally going to be a more complex game than Runeterra, than Hearthstone, but it's got space for that stuff, which I like.
That's what we kind of talked about in the Discord, was that it's like it doesn't necessarily feel like, I mean, like you said, it's not some like groundbreaking thing right now, but we kind of all acknowledge that there's a lot of stuff that it has to like work with. It has a sort of attack token thing that can clearly be manipulated. It has like attack order as a concept, which isn't in Magic. So I think I still kind of struggle with like who the audience is for it specifically. And I still kind of land on like, I feel like in part their audience is the people who play League of Legends, who like want to kind of stick in the right ecosystem, because I feel like if I was someone looking to audit a card game, if I want something complex, I would go with Magic. And if I want something more simple, I'd go with Hearthstone. And I don't really know if I don't like have the sort of resonance with like a lot of the like League of Legends lore stuff, I'm not sure what would pull me to Runeterra over one of these other two things right now. I don't know if you have like what your kind of reaction is to that.
I mean, I agree. I've had that thought many times. It's like, yeah, who's going to be playing this game? Not because I don't think it has a pool, but because I think when you look at like card games over the past few years, like these, you know, Hearthstone first came out in like 2014, 2013 type thing. It's been around for such a long time. A lot of that player base, I feel like, has already decided where they stand, you know, where they want to be. And Artifact kind of failed. You know, it failed to occupy that space that it wanted to fail. So I think if it's not going to be successful, it's going to be on those grounds that like the players already have their thing. They already have their like investments in any either one of these Magic or Hearthstone games. And it's going to be difficult for them to like pull those people over. Now, I think the appeal goes a little bit beyond that, in that I do think that like the difficulty space that this resides in is good. And I think that the fact that it is so easy to get cards will pull people over, because I think that's what, if you're going to alleviate the fact that players have already invested a lot into these other ecosystems, it's good that you make it easy for them to collect cards and participate in these games at a high level by constructing the decks that they want to build at a pretty fast rate, which is allowed for in Runeterra at this point. In Hearthstone, like if you're a new player, you're fucked. Like you cannot, it's going to take you so long to earn the stuff that you need, even for one deck to play in constructed, to play with the big boys or whatever, you know? But like just that fact where you're like, okay, I kind of like this game a little more than Hearthstone. It's easier for me to get cards. I'll come over to this. And I think that's what Riot is banking on. And I think that they also have more of a League of Legends-esque monetization system, where they're not banking on people to buy like the champions or the cards in this case. Instead, what they're kind of banking on is that people will invest more in the
like art, cosmetics, packs, stuff. Yes. Yeah.
Oh, well, you can't even buy packs in this game.
Oh, right.
There's no packs that you can buy in Legends of Runeterra, which is fucking crazy. You can buy wild cards, but the amount that you could buy per week is capped. So you can only only buy like two legendaries a week.
Yeah.
Which is kind of crazy. Cool. Yeah.
I like that model better than like you said with Hearthstones. Like some of my coworkers used to be into Hearthstone and they like fell off a season, and it's like they can't, like getting back into expensive at that point, and you have to learn the new decks. And it's like,
man,
it just seems like if you don't stick with it, sounds like, I mean, I guess that's kind of like how Overwatch is in a sense. Like I don't know how to play Overwatch anymore.
But it's not because you haven't paid for the new characters, because like you're not used to the meta. But like if you were to put the time in to be like, oh, let me learn these three new characters that came out,
whereas Hearthstone's like it costs money and you have to learn it, which is like, one wants to do both.
This reminds me of like one of the things that I really loved about Artifact that no game has done besides Artifact, which was like, I think to kind of like get over that sort of like, it's not even, I don't know, what would you guys call this thing? Like, that's not sunk cost. It's like cost to play, kind of. I like the sort of like barrier.
I know what you mean.
The like barrier of like needing to have the cards to play effectively in Hearthstone. Like in Artifact, they had this specific mode where you basically play these sort of like rotating challenges, where they would just give you a deck and say like, there's this deck, try these five things. Here's another deck that's a different composition, try these five things. And it was like, it was a really cool way to engage with like the core system of the game without having to deal with any of the monetization stuff, which on the record I think was totally fine. But I think that not like giving players, Magic has it, like, I mean, both games have it in a sense with like bot games, but they're still kind of predicated on you being able to like effectively build a deck to play. And even the initial decks they give you, I don't know what Runeterra is going to do, but like, I did all my initial mastery stuff in Magic and it like gave me like five decks. but that is now a set old. And so those decks will get older with time and eventually expire. And so, but even then, like the kind of promise with Artifact was that it would kind of be putting out these sort of new challenges at a pretty frequent cadence. So the implication was that you'd be able to play with one, at least one good new deck with certain challenges just against AI, but like actually maybe even players too, that you could just play against to kind of bank on the fact that you just had a good deck that you could play. It didn't like go into your collection, but it was free. And that for me was like super liberating because I still don't really like deck building as a thing, but just knowing I could play with a deck in kind of a novel scenario that I know is supposed to be a good deck is like a compelling way to play. And I think it helps reduce that sort of barrier for new players to come in. Side note before you go off, Josh, was that like this is also why I like Keyforge a lot, because the instead of buying cards, you just buy the deck and then you just play the deck versus having to think about card composition or any of this stuff, which itself is a skill that is separate from effectively playing the game. So
I'm not shaking my head necessarily because I disagree, because I think Artifact, those modes that like Artifact had, or something that a lot of card games struggle with, which is like, what other content can we make besides just fucking this stuff,
right?
You know, just anything based around pain. Playing another player with constructed decks. Hearthstone, for the record, does have a lot of great
single player content. The single player like campaign stuff they started putting in there, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, and they even have put out different stuff. Like one of them is literally a puzzle mode where it's like find the lethal here, and it's like really
that
complex.
That shit's so cool. I'm like
that,
so into
it's like
that.
Its own. That's like its own game.
Yeah,
that it is within the game, which is cool. Fuck, what was I gonna say? Oh, play Slay the Spire, man.
I was actually looking. Yeah. I was like gonna play the other day, and I was like, I'm gonna play some more Magic. So I was like, I'm gonna play a card game.
I need you to play it so we could talk about it on the next episode, because I want to see what
you
think.
Write it down in my notes.
It's really awesome. Like, it's on Xbox, PC Game Pass. It's so great. Speaking of which, A Plague Tale: Innocence just came out on Game Pass, and I just bought that shit like 2 weeks ago.
R.I.P.
No, I was about to say, oh, is that why you're playing it for?
This is what I'm saying, dude. It's like, I'm never gonna buy an indie game again, or what?
Yeah,
this is bullshit.
I'm trying to think of a game recently that I feel like that happened to
me. I bought Imperator Rome.
Something I bought
when it came to Game Pass. That was like $40.
Oh yeah, that came to Game Pass.
Yeah, I was like,
quick,
fuck
too.
This. So
that
annoying.
Like,
why?
It was like they announced PC Game Pass and they're like, and Imperator Rome's on that. I was like, didn't that come out like a month ago? Like it was literally like, it was snappy. I still want to check that out. But
I've had a couple of close calls.
So
dodgy on
4X
close calls.
Where I like Void Bastards. I was about to buy that.
I bought that. I had the same thing, man. I bought it though. Got dicked.
Oh.
There
was an episode recently where I was like, oh, this game, blah, blah, blah. And you guys are like, wait, it's on Game Pass? What?
Oh, wait, shit. What
I
was
forgot
that?
What the game was.
Oh, I know.
Want to hear something
about
dumb I did?
Yeah,
so I couldn't figure out my Microsoft password, right? To log, because I never use my Xbox.
You deleted your Gmail account.
And so because I wanted to give Outer Wilds another try. Because, you know, like, we just finished our Game of the Year discussions. Everyone I know is, like, hyping it up as, like, just as good as, like, Disco Elysium. And I, like, refused to listen because I was like, it has a bad jump button. And
it does not have a bad jump button.
Yes, it does. You have to hold it down
to
jump, and that fucking
is
stupid.
I disagree.
Anyway.
It's not dumb.
So I was like, I need to give this another shot, like, from the beginning. But I could not. I was too frustrated to figure out. I was like, I don't want to like go dig this up. So instead, I just decided to buy it on PS4, and luckily, it was on sale. It was like,
oh, yeah, they're doing some crazy
off,
sale
but
recently.
Still, yeah, it wasn't on crazy. It was like $5 off, but it was like, whatever. Now I own it on PS4, and I played it for 2 hours, and I was like, nope, not for me. So
listen,
that,
I
that's
think Outer Wilds can be
I respect
pretty
it. It's a game I want to like so much, and it's like I feel like
listen,
if it controlled better, I would be really into
like
it. It was so jank.
It's
got a heart
jank,
of gold,
dude.
It really
it's a good
is.
Game.
And it's a
bummer. Fucking jank.
It's a good game, but like
there's
flying
nothing
sucks.
Jank about that
flying
game.
Flying sucks.
Game feels kind
of
jank.
I feel like I would like
jank. Some of the environments look really busted. You're just like,
dude. I agree. See, it's like it's a bummer because I think the puzzles are really inventive. I really like translating languages and like figuring it out. Like, I think it, or figuring
listen,
out
man,
this whole history.
Y'all
and
are
it,
I still
so
like the
delusional.
Outer Rim.
Stuff I really want to.
Y'all
like,
are delusional.
It's so, like, there's so much I want, like, I really like about this game, but it's, like, just the act of playing it.
Hey, listeners.
Blows. Like, it's a bummer because, like, I want to like it. I don't
listeners,
know.
Look at me.
I'm the captain.
It's
now.
A good game, guys. We're right. We're the ones who are right here, okay? Not them.
I'm
don't
saying
listen.
It's a good look, game. I'm just saying that it's got some issues.
Yeah, I'm saying it totally deserves all the, like,
did you finish
I get
it,
why
Kyle?
People
no,
would love
it.
It
yet. I had a thing called Christmas
I need you
to
finish
attend
it.
To.
I think it's a good, it's one of those dope but not for me games for me.
That's fine.
Which is for fine. Me is strange because it has all the, like, I love, like, puzzle adventure games. Like, it's like one of my favorite genres, and it's just like, it's a bummer I didn't click with this one.
It's not jank.
But it is funny. I feel like that's willful. That's like, it's like people
no.
saying that Witcher show's great, you know?
No,
it's like,
no, no, no.
It's
no,
like,
it's not
your
a
love
jank
is like. It's like your love is overshadowing its flaws.
No,
you know?
I honestly, I never thought this game is janky. I never had that thought when I was playing Outer Wilds. And I have had that thought before when games are janky, even if I liked the game.
Control.
I never felt that
like
way.
A little janky.
Control is kind of janky.
Also, Katie plays with tilt controls, so that's all you got to say about that.
Yeah, exactly. Like,
just for Splatoon.
Splatoon is fucking janky.
Mario Kart. I would just do that. I'm using tilt controls
buying,
to annoy everyone in the party.
Oh god, that's fucking so funny. I remember buying an N64 peripheral for tilt controls from like fucking EB Games or something to try to run around.
It's the optimal way to play Splatoon 2.
Did you guys ever play Kirby's Tilt and Tumble?
Fuck yeah,
dude. That game was
Kirby's
so
Tilt
fun.
And Tumble.
I was like, bro, yeah. This is. Fucking it's tense. Anyway, guys, what are we doing?
What else do you guys play?
I played a big one about a month ago, actually. So I was just telling everyone about this before we start recording. So like I think it was like end of December, maybe I think it was about the week before I went on my big winter break, and I got an email in my inbox in my Gmail from
subject line. What was the subject line?
Kentucky Route Zero news. And I was
like, interesting.
I was like, oh, okay. And basically it was very quickly, oh, we have some embargo news, which like the beginning of January, they announced the release date, which was January 28th, this past Tuesday. And here's a code. Like basically just like pretty much like here's a code for Act 5. Of Kentucky Route Zero.
You're like, I have like, the last act of Kentucky Route
it felt
Zero
like a,
in my
like,
possession.
I was like, it felt like I had like a ticking time bomb. I was like, I have the last.
Yeah, like look over
yeah,
your shoulder.
Right?
And, like,
it was just like, a, oh my God. And then I had to get like a weird beta thing because I already own it. So I could not activate the code.
It
was like a whole thing.
It seems cool, but I just hate how it's American.
Oh my God. Don't
Josh, I don't. Don't want to get. I don't want to even start right now with that. I cannot. I don't want to even like acknowledge that conversation,
guys. It's just like, aren't there? Couldn't we have just said it in Mexico instead and called it American dirt? You know.
Right?
Think about it, guys.
Why not call it California the Five? You know what? Come on.
I mean, come on, guys. That's all I'm saying. American dirt.
Why not call it
cardboard computer?
Rue de Marche.
I'm so curious about the book that I almost want to read it, but I don't want to give that author any money, you know? But I keep hearing it's so bad. So there's this new book that came out called American Dirt. It's like on Oprah's book club. It's like, I think by a white writer, and it's about like these immigrants who are fleeing the cartel and coming to America. It's supposed to be this like very like moving story, but apparently it's like very, very poorly written, and so many people are just calling it out of just like who gets to like write about these,
and
like it's pretty much just like it's like I'm trying to think of the word for it. It would be like not torture porn, like I don't know, there's like a there's like a phrase for
disaster
this type of
porn.
Like type of writing, you know, it's kind of like victimizing.
It's like extractive.
People. You know, it's like these people, like this person did not experience any of this stuff. This woman's like not equipped to write about this in any fashion.
And
like
then,
her
like,
way of like connecting is just like dropping in Spanish words every sentence or whatever.
Yeah.
And it's like
Spanglish.
It sounds
bullshit.
Horrible. Yeah, it sounds horrible. And I then, really like, want to read
at
it.
the launch party or whatever, they were like taking pictures, and it was like, oh my god, they have these like little center pieces have like fake barbed wire on them, on like the floral centerpieces.
There's a really good article. I feel bad that I'm not remembering where this was published. It might have been the New Yorker, but I'm told, man, I wish I remember where it was published. But this woman went to the like opening night like book reading for it with the author or whatever, and she gave this like long preamble where she was like thanking her publisher and her editors and all the stuff, her family, and like the one like people she didn't think was like, you know, like actual the like Mexicans that immigrated into this country, the people that went through it. And it's just like, it just seems really bad, and I'm so curious about that book because I love a bad book. Bad books are entertaining and fun to read because, like, wow, I could totally get published one day if this trash got published, you know?
Yeah, some shitty stuff gets published,
right?
For real.
Right? It's like, it gives me more hope because I have no self-esteem. But it's like, you know what? Maybe one day, one day I could be this book.
The world would be hopefully a better place if Kentucky Route Zero was more like American Dirt, oh is what God. We're trying to say. That's the point.
So you got a code.
Anyway,
you
so
like
I got a code, or I had to get like a beta code. It was like a whole thing. But anyway, so I got back in, and it was weird. So I decided like before to like kind of dip my toes in while I was figuring out those beta things. It took a few weeks to get that sorted out. So I played through like Acts 1-4 again, which I hadn't played in quite a while. And man, that it's still like even Act 1 and 2, which came out in 2013, like 7 years ago. It's like the writing
slappers
in those games is there's
so
it's just
good.
So good. And it's kind of crazy like playing these now because you can see how many games were just influenced by these. Like it's just so apparent. Like I feel like I didn't realize it playing them at the time, but like pretty much any like narrative driven indie game I feel like was very heavily inspired by
what
Kentucky Route Zero
was
doing.
Influence?
I mean, I know. Okay, oh, okay. I know we have
influence.
This
please come in. Wow.
But I don't know. It's
what's
like,
good about Kentucky Route Zero's influence? Let's, because that's what the conversation's all about. You know what I'm saying?
I think it's not about what's good for it. Good about it. I think it's just the fact that a lot of games are borrowing heavily from. It's like
it's not. Been, that's not like why it's good. That's not what I'm saying. I'm
like,
saying
you know
it's
what
like,
other indie game was big in 2013, Josh? Fucking Scribblenauts. All right, like. Kentucky Route Zero kind of came at like a time where like,
you know,
it showed that like hella serious
like
games
it.
Could be a thing.
Braid,
know? Which
yeah.
is cool.
Braid, bro.
Oh, that was like 2008,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
Braid. That was a long time ago.
That was
Jesus.
Before Kentucky Route Zero.
I thought you said I was only four.
what's it called? For Emma Forever Ago.
No, Bon Iver?
Wow,
no,
you really just pulled
that
one out of your ass.
No, the other one that's like, the one that's by the dude who did Everybody's Gone to the Rapture.
Oh, Dear S.
Evan Carter.
Dear Evan Hansen.
Is it Dear Esther?
Dear
what
Esther,
is that?
Yeah. Dear yeah. Esther. There you go. Dear Esther.
I didn't like Dear Esther. I didn't
Neither
like
did
Rapture
I, but it
either.
Was influential.
But yeah,
but it was
I mean,
influential.
True. That's fair. Yeah. Anyway, Kentucky Route Zero. I wrote a big review that you can read. I don't want to just like regurgitate everything I wrote in that review. But I think what really like just makes it special, like playing it all in one go makes it more interesting, I guess, in retrospect, is like how the game like kind of grows with how America has changed, which sounds stupid. I don't know if that makes sense at all. Like it just feels like it starts out like pretty cynical and bleak, but I feel like as it goes on, it gets like more hopeful and whatnot in like this like very sweet way, but it never feels like.
Wait, hold on. Are you talking specifically about Act 5?
I'm talking about like the whole
the
game.
The whole game. Okay, okay.
Man.
Because I played Acts 1-3 with some of 4 sprinkled on top.
Guys, hold on, guys. Guys, what? 2013 is fucking ground zero for indie games.
Whoa. Right? Was that the summer of arcade stuff? Because that was like. Fez was like probably 2012, right?
First top released in 2013, Proteus.
Oh, that's a great game.
Second release, Kentucky Route Zero. Third release, The Stanley Parable.
Man, this
release
is like
number 4,
a banger of a year.
Gone Home. Number 5, fucking Papers, Please. That's like, that like paints the next decade of what indie games look like.
That's totally true.
Like a wide swath.
It's like everyone right played a lot of games in 2013. It's like, wow, these are all great. I'm gonna make this game now, but different. And Josh is seething.
We had people writing about them at the time too. It's cool.
Remember people wrote about video games and cared?
Wow.
Yeah. People really cared about games.
Whose names weren't Katie McCarthy?
Couldn't be me.
Whose names were not Katie McCarthy?
I wasn't writing about games yet. I was writing about games in 2014.
Well, their names were not Katie McCarthy then.
Yeah. Maybe I'm bad with time. It might be 2015. No, 2014. Souls. I don't know. I've been in this industry a while.
Please continue.
Anyway, I don't know. This game made me reflect a lot on like my own life this past decade and everything. And just, you know, the shit my family's gone through because of, you know, getting like evicted from houses and like they can't afford to buy a home and like all this type of stuff. It like really dredges up those sort of feelings, which I've never had from a video game. I've never had a video game like confront those ideas and those like realities ever either in like a way that didn't feel like on the nose or whatever. And I don't know, it's just like a very poetic game. I don't know, it's like a weird game to describe because it's just like,
yeah,
I don't want to spoil anything. It's like a game like you like it's, I think it is better taken as episodic, like maybe
it's
rather
like,
than
get some whiskey, sit down and like once a week play an episode. It's like the way to do
that
it.
Would kind of, I feel like maybe like not these long years long stretches in between obviously, but like that seems like an ideal way to play it because you can kind of sit with it, which is like how I've been all these years, you know. And then playing it all again was like interesting because now I have this like new like adult perspective to view these things where it's like I was in college at the time, like in 2013 when that act came out, or those two acts came out, like my mom was laid off from her job that year. So it was like this huge like, oh, whoa, they're like actually like talking about this shit and like in a profound way. And then act 3 is like probably my favorite act of the series. Like I just feel like act 3 has like so many just like incredible moments and everything. And Act 5 is very great, but I don't want to spoil that at all for anyone.
But can you talk a little bit more about Act 5, just because that's the new one. That's the one I'm not familiar with. I'm familiar with the rest of them, but what's cool about Act 5?
Act 5, so like one thing I find really fascinating about the series going into Act 5 is your like main character is this guy named Conway, who is this like old man. He's making like one last delivery for this like antique store he works for, but it's like the address doesn't exist or doesn't seemingly exist, so he has to go on this like big journey just like to find this place to deliver these antiques, and then like through the journey like more people join the party or whatever, but he gets kind of like embroiled in this whole scheme where he suddenly owes a major debt to this whiskey distillery, and basically this whiskey distillery will like people trade in their monetary debt or people trade like debt they're owed to this company, and then or this distillery, and then the distillery like takes them away basically to for indentured servitude forever. So and they become skeletons. So basically like Conway is his debt is traded into this distillery pretty much against his will. And then he kind of, as the game goes on, you're like losing control of him and you're like watching him like spiral out of control and everything. And by like act 3 you like lose control of him entirely, and then you're just playing as like the other people, and it happens in like such a subtle way that you like barely notice it when it happens. And act 5 is really fascinating because they like you're not playing as any of the characters anymore, you're like an outside perspective looking in now, and it does it in like such a like natural way that it's like really moving, you know. You're kind of like letting go of these characters and watching them go on to like do whatever's next or whatever. And yeah, I don't know if that makes sense.
How long did it take you? How long did it take you to go through all 5?
I want to say like 12 hours, maybe less.
That sounds about right. They're like 2 hours each.
Yeah. It's like, and act 5 is like an hour and a half, 2 hours maybe.
Oh, wow.
It's like, it's pretty short.
Okay.
Kentucky Route Zero is like the each episode is like what I want from a video game. It's like perfect length, perfect pitch, perfect tone, just like exceptional. Sit down, do it in like a sitting.
Each one has something going on that's like, whoa, whoa, whoa. Like, what are we doing? Like, what's happening now? You know, where it's just, they have these moments that are just completely different than what you'd experienced in the game before that point. Totally unexpected in a way that you've almost, it's almost like uncomfortable sometimes because you're like, where the fuck am I? Like, what is going on here? Like when it tosses, when all the characters are just like these like wireframe skeleton dudes, or like when you end up going into like a text adventure sort of thing, or like when they take you to the world map type thing and it's just this again like wireframey thing. It's like, what am I experiencing?
So good. It's like, it really, I feel like we, like something like this, and I think like Disco Elysium, like just kind of, they like so blow open like what is like possible with games. I mean, Disco in a way is like very traditional. I think Kentucky Route Zero is kind of traditional, but still weird. And it's like so much shit comes out that is like so similar. It's like, and it's so hard to think outside of that. And then you play these games and it's like a fucking breath of fresh air. You're like, oh man, like this is, and it's also interested in being a game too, which is good. It's not like something that's not a game that's asking to be a game. It's like, we're video games, but we're like different.
Yeah.
And that's like, we're working with different things. We're thinking about different references. We're not like trying to be Mario or something. Like, we're trying to be our own thing. And it's just like, it's like the first modern video game.
Kentucky Route Zero also has, it feels like a multimedia artwork. You know what I'm saying? Where it's,
yeah, and it is, right? There's like a VR piece. There's like a all this other shit.
That's true. 100%. I mean, like, even within the context of the game itself, where it's like combining multiple genres of games and multiple like styles in one place, and it feels natural throughout, which I really dig about it. But in that way, it's kind of like pushing at the boundaries of like, what can a video game do and still get away with type thing that I really like. There's something actually related to this that I want to talk about, but I want to make sure that we're getting, that we wrap up our KRZ convo here.
Yeah, I mean, I just want to, like, I feel like we'll talk more extensively about it once y'all have played Act 5, because I'm the one who's played Act 5 so far.
And everyone else, too.
Yeah, and everyone else in the world. I mean, I'm sure, like, some people are, like, jumping on right away. Like, also, another thing that's very strange about this game is it has, like, a very, like, passionate and loud community, which I feel like you wouldn't expect from, like, a very, like, sad, kind of like, narrative game. It's odd, but it's cool to me. Like, it's, like... Yeah. You know, it's cool. There's people calling this hotline just for any like nugget of information about like what's coming next to Kentucky Route Zero and everything. And I don't know, it deserves it. I think it deserves all the hype it's gotten. It's like a truly excellent game. It's like probably one of the few, like probably one of like five games I would call a masterpiece. Like, it literally, I cannot think of one fucking flaw. Like, it's not a flawed masterpiece. It is like a true masterpiece. Like, it is truly one of like the best games I've ever played, like bar none.
Yeah,
which it feels like hyperbole to say, but I gotta like get really, back in. It really is. It's just like so good, and like
I saw it on the Switch yesterday. I was like looking through the eShop, and I was cool. Like, "What?"
It's on Switch. It's on PS4. I think it's on Xbox also, and PC.
Dope. It's dope.
And if you already own it, you just have Act 5, and the menus are different. New font work, like, looks very nice. You can customize the font size, which is cool. I don't know.
I think I don't know if you bring this up in your piece, Katie, but like the other crazy thing about the game is how much change it's seen. It's seen the sort of degree of change that I think a lot of indie games haven't seen over their lifespan. Like, this thing started out as like it wasn't even on Steam for a while. You had to buy it from the person's website, and then like fast forward 7 years and they have a publisher that's a big publisher that grew out of like a film company, and like also they're like on a Switch, which didn't exist at the time, or it did but they didn't know about it. Like, it's like, it's crazy to see a project like this kind of like evolve through all these like phases. Like, the fucking Xbox 360 was like the console when this thing came out. Like, we're almost past Xbox One to something new. Like,
it's crazy,
been around for, it's like seen a lot of shit and kind of weathered it in a very special way.
Yeah, and I have an interview also up on usgamer.net that I did with Cardboard Computer, which is the three developer. It's only also a three-person team that made this. Like, no contractors or whatever. It's just three people, which I find very impressive. But I talked to them about it, and, like, one thing is, like, yeah, like, with Act 1, they didn't even have, like, a menu or anything, really. Like, when the game ended, it would just like hard quit on your computer, and people thought there was something wrong, but they're like, no, we just didn't want to like make a screen for it to wrap back to. It's like too much work, and we're like already working on act two. So, and like, yeah, the menu before used to just be white links on a black page. And now it's like this really like nice, like compass thing that you like twist around. All the interludes are included, which is also,
oh, you can only
download on the their personal site before. So it's cool to like have it like the whole package, which is basically five acts, I think six interludes, because there's one after act five. There's like a little epilogue. So it's like, maybe it's just five. I can't count. Anyway, but yeah, it's utmost recommendation from me. I also,
Bad
yeah,
End
so
recommends.
Go read my interview if you're interested.
Bad End recs.
The gold seal of approval, Bad End recommends. We got to get one of those
the
designed.
Bad End seal
maybe
of
that's like going to be our first merch. Bad End recommends. Little stamp on your shirt embroidered in there.
Oh my God.
That'll be so cool.
Someone else had a good shirt idea recently.
Oh,
for Bad End
hat,
merch.
A hat. Oh, yeah. And the Evangelion hat. One.
That was good. A lot of good. We got to get some merch going.
Yeah. Anyway, folks, I wanted to talk about something else that I observed this week that made me think about video games, but it's not video games. And have you ever seen those videos on YouTube that get recommended?
Oh, I know what you're going to talk about.
You might not, because a lot of types of videos get recommended, but I've been getting these videos that are like solved $10,000 puzzle box, impossible,
oh,
hardest,
dude,
puzzle box 100%. I've ever seen, blah blah blah. Have you ever seen those? Have you ever watched one of those videos?
I've actively sought out puzzle box videos.
So I got these puzzle boxes recommended, and these videos are really cool. So essentially what they do is they get these like physical puzzle boxes that have these like little mechanics that it just looks like a typically like just a closed case that you would know have
it
no way
looks
of
like
opening.
Like a sort of like wooden thing you put blunts in.
There's all different kinds. And this one, this guy had custom made, it was $10,000. But essentially it worked through like a series of like, it looked like a flat surface, but they were actually, you could push in parts of the surface and like, it was like little drawers. And like, if you pushed one in, like you could pull another one out, et cetera, et cetera. And then like one of them had a little magnet in it. So then like you could manipulate stuff with the magnet and you would like wave it around the box and like little contraptions would fire off that would like allow you to open more drawers. You had to like insert some drawers back into the box, which would like let you pop out other things. But it's just very intricate mechanisms. And then once you solve it, there's like a little prize for you. This guy, he does a lot of like card tricks. So he got like a deck of cards, and then there's like this little baggie that had two coins that are like, you did it or whatever, like this guy's signature. The puzzle box maker had it where it was like these little coins in a pouch that you get, and it's like showing that you beat this puzzle box. But anyway, what I was thinking like, what makes these fucking puzzle boxes so cool, right? Like, what is so awesome about these things? And I think what I find really interesting about them is that part of solving them come and part of the joy of like discovering what these things do is not knowing how you can interact with them, not knowing what the possible interactions are, right? So like if you have a puzzle, like an actual like puzzle that you're putting together, it's like, you know what you're doing. You're looking for the corner pieces. You're looking for the pieces that connect to them. And then it's all just a matter of busy work. You can only interact with this puzzle in one way. Every piece will fit together one way. And that's how it works. But if you got like with these puzzle boxes and stuff like that, it's like these physical things. And because there's so many things that we can physically do in this world, right? To interact with an object, to interact with other people, what have you. It's cool because you don't know what that thing is with this puzzle box. You know, you have to figure out, what do I do? And that answer is like, maybe you have to like, you know, press on a part of the box that like doesn't look like it can be interacted with. And they hide what those interactions are. And they're all hidden behind these like very just unintuitive ways of interacting with the box that when you do solve them are like mind-blowing. And I've watched some other ones since then. One of them was like this little like this fucking big old padlock type thing that he had, which was like to interact with that, you had to like turn these knobs into like very specific positions and then like tweak some parts at the same part time that you're tweaking other parts. So that was more about like timing and object manipulation and stuff like that. Whereas this one was more just like discovering what you can do with this box. And I'm trying to apply this to video games. Like, how can you rekindle that same sense of like figuring something out in a video game, right? And I think what's hard about it is that video games have a very limited range of things that you can do to interact with them, because like the physical world has so many more possibilities and there's way less of them that are like obvious to us. Like right off the bat with a video game, it's like you could press B, you know, you can move your cursor over this thing. And with like a point and click adventure, you could move your cursor over this wall and then click it. And then, oh, it opens up and there was something there all along. But it's like, that's why like adventure games and shit, like point and click stuff, you just end up clicking on every part of the screen and seeing like what the object that can be interacted with is. And it's like not cool because you're only doing one thing. You're just like clicking on stuff or you're pressing buttons and stuff like that. But I think that's one advantage of stuff that happens in a physical world. And like these kinds of puzzles and little mini adventures is that like you have that space to operate in that you don't necessarily have in video games. And I think something that would be really cool is like, if you could emulate that in a video game, if you could. And I think that's something that Outer Wilds does really well.
Oh, there it is.
That's how you're bringing it back
around. I literally just thought of this right now, but I think I when we were talking about that game, I talked about parts of it as feeling like magical, feeling like it has the same sense of bewilderment I said a lot. It's that feeling where it's like it feels like you're interacting with the game in a way that you never have interacted with a video game before. And it starts coming around the halfway to the end points of the game. But I think that's one thing that Outer Wilds does really fucking well, is like the interactions that you do are really unexpected and stuff that you've never seen in a game before. And I want to see more of that. But that's what I really like about these puzzle box videos, you know?
I feel like the Outer Wilds is in a lot of ways like a puzzle box, because it's like, I think there's a very literal comparison to what you're talking about with games like there's games like, I think they're called like The Room. There's like a series of like mobile games that are all about like this box.
Yes,
and it's like
just
puzzle, it's like digital puzzle box. And that's like,
yeah,
it's not the same, right? Like it's not the same as doing something physically. And I think what The Outer Wilds does is that it leans into the sort of limitation that you're talking about. But it's almost like if you took a puzzle box and sort of like folded it in on itself and then stretched it out to be the size of like a universe, quote unquote. So like,
yeah.
It's got like all these things kind of connect, and it's kind of part of the themes, right? Like the themes of sort of quantum entanglement. One thing here connects to this thing over here. So as you're doing these things are switching. So I feel like there's a very direct sort of puzzle boxiness. And that's sort of like, I think that's also, we talked about this when it came out, but like this sort of necessity of the like 15 minute time thing where the game doesn't work without this time limit because it's predicated on like intense choreographed motion for 15 minutes that has to be sort of like untangled. And that's like very puzzle boxy. It's like, there's a sequence of events that have to be done so that you can get this thing into a specific state such that it can go to this other level, which is like the whole, that's like the whole thing with a puzzle box. It's like, how do I manipulate these things in ways that seem like they are interacting together and like may or may not work to get to this other thing that I have to do to basically go to the next step. So I'm totally with you on this point.
Yeah, and some of the stuff, the quantum stuff, man, the quantum moon.
Fuck you
unforgettable
up.
Unforgettable experience, man. Oh God. I fucking love that game, man. That sense, and I want that more from video games. I'm trying to think of other instances where I get it. I guess in Kojima games I would get that. Like like when you're, everyone always talks about the Psycho Mantis fight.
Oh man.
Cause you're like, oh, you have to unplug your controller, plug it into the port 2 to do it.
That's like greatest and that's moments like, in video game shit.
What? And he's reading your save files. If there's other Konami games that you have saved, and he's like, oh, you like fucking Bubble Bobble or whatever. Like, but that's all so damn cool. And it's very puzzle boxy in the way that you interact with it. It's like it's unexpected because you would not expect to be doing this type of thing with your video game. And you know, it's cheesy. It's on the nose. It's a little much. It was like, you know, trying a little too hard to break the fourth wall. But at the same time, like, why can't we have like a cheesy game that does that? Another situation that did that, Hotel Dusk.
Yeah.
Detective game. Like, one of the things is you're holding like your notebook, and like one of the puzzles is that you have to like close your DS and then open it again, and then like some of the letters that were on one side of the screen appear on the other side of the screen as if you had folded the page, and then the letters like kind of fell over onto the other side. Or I think it's like the puzzle pieces or something that had like kind of fallen over onto the other side, and like that's how you solve the puzzle. But like, that shit's cool, man. I want more of that. Or like when you had to blowing into your microphone was never a real thing.
I think this reminds me of like why I don't like a lot of like 3D platformer puzzle games, because the sort of like, it doesn't feel like you get to experiment in the same way that you're talking about. Like, you don't get to fail. You just get to like see what you have to do, and you're like, okay, I got to do that. And it's not really a puzzle to figure it out. It's more of a, we talked about this idea of like execution kind of like challenge. It's less about, you don't like look at Portal and be like, let me try this and see if that works. It's like, okay, I got to, looking at it. Okay, I got it. Now I just got to fucking do it before I get shot by this turret.
Yes. So like, let me, Katie, if you're not never going to finish Outer Wilds, let me fucking spoil
for me. I haven't finished it yet.
Well, maybe.
Well, I thought it was cool that one time I walked upside down and then.
Dude, that's not.
Died.
Dude, that's like the.
Or that time.
That's not even.
I had to escape a cave because it was filling up with quicksand.
That's not.
And then I died and I had to go back and do the exact same thing again.
There's this one
to finish the puzzle
where you're in a cave, right? And you have these like this little sensor that goes like, I'll let you know when I'm going to say it, Kyle. They have this sensor where it senses out where these like quantum rocks are, right? And in the tutorial section, you see those where you look at the rocks and they're there, and then you look away and you look back and it's moved. The rock has moved somewhere else. It's
because
like a quantum stone, right? Those come up multiple times in the game. And there's this part where you're in a cave. Okay, skip forward like a minute, listeners, if you don't want to hear the spoiler, where you're in a cave and you're looking like, okay, my quantum thing is telling me that the quantum rock is going to be in this cave. So you go in the cave, you go up to you see the fucking rock. It looks so scary because it's this big ominous black rock that looks just scary. You go up to it and you're like, what the fuck am I supposed to do with this thing? And you think like, okay, so you shine your light on it and it's there. You turn off your light, you turn it on, and it's gone because you weren't observing it for a second, so it moved. You're like, what the hell? And then, so you go, what you're supposed to do, you jump onto the rock, and then your flashlight is on, you turn off your light, and you turn it on, and you're in a completely different place. Like, in a different fucking area of the world. Like, you've been transported to the secret cave just because you turn off your light and turned it on again. And when that shit happened, I like, what the fuck just happened? And it's like, it's insane when you experience that shit. It's like, it's really like, you just saw a magic trick. I'm trying to tell Kyle to put his headphones back.
Kyle doesn't have his headphones in.
Okay, we finished. But it's that
just watching
kind
Josh's
of thing.
Hands.
It's that kind of thing that feels like when you've solved it, when you've gotten to that point, you don't know where you're going to find yourself or what's going to happen. And when it happens, you're just like, what the fuck was that? And that happens like many times in the course of this game where you're like, okay, I'm going to try this crazy thing that there's no fucking way it's going to do anything. And then it does. And then you're like, where the fuck am I? Like, what is happening? Where has this game taken me? And it's this like, man, I would get this, like my stomach would feel all
you just
like
touched your nipples
tingly
when that
and
happened. Like your nipples start getting like, hard.
I touched everything.
Ew.
What?
Too much information.
No, I'm saying not just my nipples. Come on, guys. Anyway, I want that more from my games. I want those kinds of experiences, man. The magic of video games.
Have you tried
Film
playing?
Can't do that.
Have you tried playing
as much?
The beach.
Yeah, have you played Call of Duty? It feels good when you get a kill streak.
For the record,
yeah, you ever dropped white phosphorus on the haters? Because that'll
God.
And then you teabag on them.
Give them a little bit of the old WP, and I don't mean well played. I do love those puzzle box games, though. For the record,
like what you explained earlier with like the flipping the DS shut. Like, I love when games do that weird type of stuff. I can't weirdly think of anything off the top of my head. Like, I know I've definitely experienced games that do like cool, unexpected, like, oh, I had no idea how you solved
it. I want to say Breath of the Wild has some of that, but that's because it has so many
weird
interactions.
It's more like logic puzzle. Like, it's more like, I mean, I don't know.
I feel like you can like cheese some shit in Breath of the Wild in a way that's very atypical of a Zelda game, where you're like, I'm kind of like, I feel like Zelda's usually so regimented, but you can like do these shrines and be like, I'm definitely not supposed to do it this way.
Yeah. I'm just going to project myself off this cube
like,
and
I'm
skip
turn this
whole
platform
portion
in the middle with my controller.
I'm just going to whack it
at a weird angle and then propel myself.
I'm going to create a circuit with like all my swords that are made out of metal.
Yeah, it's like just like weird
yeah,
shit
I would do
like
that all the time. Just like dropping all my shit and being like,
zap. Bitch. Yeah.
But like the mazes and stuff.
Yeah.
Those labyrinths where you're like, what the fuck is,
dude,
like, what is this area of the map?
I skipped the entirety of the Hyrule Castle because I climbed up the back of it. So like I didn't even go through like all of it.
So
I just went
amazing.
Straight to the boss.
That's the that's the
because like I read you could do that and I was like, God, fuck it, I'm not doing
Wild
all this. So I just climbed at the back and ran through, like totally just ignored any.
I don't even know what's
enemies
in the back
like
of Hyrule Castle.
You just climb a big wall. It's giant. Wow. It's like you're not supposed to, but like, you know, I took a bunch of like food.
That's dope.
So I was like making my stamina extra long and like climbing it. And then you just like run down. It's like a very short path. You have to run past a few enemies and you can go straight to like Ganon.
Fucking speed run strats.
It's great because I
podcast.
Yeah, it was fun. I mean, it was not speed running, but that was like me being like, I don't want to break any of my weapons before the fight. What the hell?
That's like one of the core elements of video game magic. You know, like you talk about the magic of cinema, the magic of comic books, the magic of, I think one of the core elements of the magic of video games is giving you a large array of ways to interact with things and using them in ways that are truly unexpected to the player. And we don't see it often.
Josh, I'm gonna counter your argument and say that the magic of video games is not giving players a large amount of things. It's giving them a small amount of things and giving them interesting ways to use those things that are unexpected. Because if you give people a lot of stuff, you get like one-offs. But if you give people four things and you're like, oh shit, I didn't realize that stasis could be used like that. That's like the fucking
magic. I think video games already use that stuff, do that pretty well, where they use their like limited palette of things and to do. But I'm saying when you give them, Breath of the Wild gives you a lot. It might be one of the reasons why that game is cool is because it has some of the most ways to interact with stuff that I've ever seen in a game.
Yeah.
You know, like it depends on the weather. It depends on like the height, that the altitude that you're at, the time of day, the materials that the things that you're working with are made out of. They called it the quote chemistry engine. Like you referred to it as that at one point. There's just so many different ways you can interact with something. And I don't mean like the amount of buttons that you have. I mean, just like what you can do with the things that are in the world.
I mean, I think it's, you know, like they like set up like little systems and they give you sort of like, they're like, okay, you can, because Link's moveset is really simple, right? It's like he can swing a sword, he can walk, and he can climb. And they're like, what can we do?
There's a lot more than that. But
I mean, like, but like really though, like does he, what else can he can jump?
He can surf on his shield. He can like swing around his sword.
Surfing,
he can throw
thing.
Weapons.
But I guess it's like the scale of like the possibility space of a video game, it's like a relatively limited set. And they're more like, he can swing a sword. Okay, what does that mean? It's like, oh, well, he can chop trees. Oh, well, he can do this thing. Oh, he can do this thing. And it's like looking at all these things and saying that instead of like adding another system, what if we just make it where that this affects this? And you're like, oh, fuck. Yes. Like, that's crazy.
Yes.
Splunky is like kind of similar in this way, like famously as well.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's true. And I think that's the thing. Like, man, like that's what really gets me in video games, I'm realizing, is that like puzzle box effect of, hey, I didn't know that I could do this. Oh, hey, this was intended all along, or this was like made possible all along in an explicit way by the person who created this game, where it's like something clicks like between you and them where you're like, oh my God, you got me. And this is so good. Like,
yeah.
And that's what I like about Outer Wilds a lot.
And that's what I like about Outer Wilds by Josh Clixon.
No, it really, at the end of the day, like, that's what really got me about that game, where those moments specifically, I like that game a lot.
It's fucking good.
It's a good game, and you should finish it.
I wrote down Slay the Spire and Outer Wilds.
I implore you to
finish that Outer game. Outer Worlds, right? I'm writing the Outer Worlds.
Shut up. even if it involves looking up strategy guide shit, because that's what I ended up doing. I ended up looking up the solutions to some of the stuff that I couldn't figure out, because, you know, I don't have that pride, you know? And even when, you know...
Oh, I have zero pride. Yeah. I look up guides. If I'm not reviewing it, I mean, we're not going to need it. I am looking up guides all the time.
I'm actually looking to buy a Breath of the Wild guide, but it looks like they're fucking out of print. So that's weird.
Oh, probably.
Like, why?
That makes sense. That's game fucking came out a huge few years game. Ago and they probably did not sell many physical.
I bet you Breath of the Wild was in the top 10 sales of Japan last year.
Here, I came up with another game that does this really well. Your Walk.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Deep Pool.
Yeah.
Deep Pool.
That's a good
one. That one's probably 2013 too. Maybe 2014.
That sounds right. I think it's 2013 or 14. That might have been 2012
I don't think it's 2012.
Yeah, that was 2011.
I'm going to look it up right now.
Do 2011.
It. Oh, baby.
Let's take our bets. I'm putting $20.
13 or 14. 2010. I'm calling it 2010.
13. I'm going to say 13.
2012.
Fuck.
Oh, no, it is 2013. Sorry.
Yes.
God fucking damn it.
Got him.
That was 2013. Did they do a game before that?
February 2013. So basically 2011.
I have in my brain.
It's basically 2010. Yeah.
So I was right twice.
Your Walk is great.
Oh, that's Device an incredible 6 game.
To a lesser
Smogo slappers.
But Device 6 is good.
Smogo's makes some good slappers. Games.
Oh, wait. You know? Hold on. Can I talk about a game real fast?
Yeah.
You guys, okay, listen, Bad End listenership, of which, by the way, we have a fuck ton of people listening to this podcast now. So
Thank you for listening. Honestly, our listener numbers last month were blowing my mind.
We're like a real fucking podcast.
Bonkers.
So I'm going to use my platform right now to shout out this mobile game that you guys maybe have heard of called Song of Bloom. Are you familiar with this?
I've heard of this.
Philip Stolemeyer, who did ZipZap. They did the Bacon game. He did Typesetter. What else did he do? Basically, he runs this company called Camibox. And I think he's just one of the best fucking mobile developers out there. Just crushing it. And he made this game called Song of Bloom, which is just like... Actually, this game, Song of Bloom, is so much what we're talking about, which is why I'm talking about it. You guys should totally play it, because basically it's like a weird experimental like phone game, basically. But there's a lot of stuff in it that has to do with like interpreting and reinterpreting scenes and sort of understanding the way stuff is asking you to do. So if you're looking for something like this, look up Song of Bloom, because it's fucking dope. Also, like, it's getting a lot of press. Like, apparently the developer was like on TV in their country because they're like a prolific mobile developer. So Song of Bloom, check it out. Maybe we should do something with it for Bad End. I don't know. But like, it's cheap. It's dope. Download it. That was my bit. Right.
Download it. I have pinged the Discord for questions, but we have not gotten.
Have you checked our email? Because it's been a long time.
About a
minute ago. I'm also so sweaty. I'm wearing a giant sweater because audio only, obviously. And I'm sweating.
It's a cool sweater. It's a cool sweater.
It's a fleece
oh dope
pile sweater It's actually a weird material because I got it from Uniqlo. I try not to buy fast fashion anymore, but this was very cheap.
Is Uniqlo fast fashion?
I count it as fast fashion. It's like better quality than like H&M and probably more ethical, but I'm trying to like buy less clothes and pay more for them.
That's good.
If that makes sense. Like buying sustainable clothes. So I don't buy clothes that often like I used to. Which is better. I think better. I try to thrift. I've always thrifted, but like I try to thrift and everything. But anyway, I'm sweating up a storm, so let's get these questions done.
I'm trying to pull up our email and see if we've got any.
I did, and we don't.
Guys, come on.
All right, rest in peace. It's Hit fine. Us up,
badinpod@gmail.com.
Yeah.
We out here.
We out here.
Yeah. Anyway. Let's see. Maybe I have a question.
Oh my god. Sweating my ass off, dude.
I don't have a question. Okay, we can wrap.
Let's wrap. I want to take out the sweater.
Okay, folks. Thank you again for listening to Bad End Podcast. We hope you enjoyed this episode number 67. Thanks for listening. We're so happy to have you here. You can find us on Twitter at Bad End Podcast. You can email us at badendpod@gmail.com. You can find our Patreon at patreon.com/badend. Hit us up there and you can be part of our Discord and part of our community and be our best friends, because we're best friends with everyone in our Discord and they're all super cool. And shouts out to all y'all. And also we are part of Superculture Network, which also includes at this moment Bullet Points, which is a podcast and website, and they're really dope. And you can also check out Savoir Faire, a Disco Elysium podcast, and that is still running. So you can check that out if you want to hear some more discourse about one of the greatest games of the generation. So yeah, join us there. And thanks again for listening, and we'll see you soon. Later.